This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. Great to have you with us for this first Noon Business Hour of 2019. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got a few flurries and some freezing drizzle in the picture this afternoon. It's 29 degrees. The wind chill index is 18.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's see how the trading year is beginning. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, the U.S. stock market lost almost $2.8 trillion worth of value last year. That was the most in a decade, and skepticism remains. At the opening bell, the Dow plunged 400 points. But right now, the blue chips are in the green, up 52 points or 0.25% at 23,381. NASDAQ now higher by 42 points or 0.67%. The S&P also advancing 9 points, as is the Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index. The negativity we saw early is not just from the U.S.-China trade fight. It's China's trade with the entire world. The latest measure of manufacturing in China surprisingly showed the first monthly decline in more than a year and a half. That is seen as an indicator, not just for the Chinese economy, but for all around the world. And oil is sharply higher. That's what's been helping to mitigate the downward sentiment. Crude futures up more than 4% now to $47.37 a barrel. Despite the government shutdown, the Labor Department says it will release its December jobs report on Friday as scheduled. Back to you, Cisco and Chris. Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we are looking at the annual Dogs of the Day, Dogs of the Dow, and exactly what to do with them. And drug prices rise in the new year.
Also, Tesla and Netflix both falling today. And it's Personal Finance Wednesday, some money moves that you may want to make in 2019. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Dozens of drug makers are ringing in the new year with price increases. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, we're starting 2019 by examining the investment strategy known as Dogs of the Dow. Joining us on the International Autos Orland Park business line is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast in Hammond. This is really your territory, Chuck. Tell those who don't know about this idea what it is.
Well, the Dogs of the Dow, the traditional Dogs of the Dow theory, basically looks at the 10 highest dividend-yielding stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average at the end of a year. And then you buy those 10, or maybe you buy the top one or the top five, but you focus on the highest dividend yielders in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and then hold them for the next 12 months. There is a variation on this strategy. I call it the Dow Underdogs, where you buy the 10 worst performing stocks in the Dow from the previous year and hold those for the following year. But the traditional Dogs of the Dow is based on dividend yield. And going into this year, one of the top dogs is IBM, which has been one of the dogs here for the last several years. So it'll be interesting to see how that stock performs here in 2019. But that is one of the top dogs.
Historically, how do they perform?
You know, I think the historical record's pretty good. I mean, it doesn't work in every year. And in 2018, it was submarined a bit by GE, which was one of the dogs of the Dow at the beginning of the year. As people may recall, GE was booted from the Dow during 2018. But if you were following the strategy and buying the top 10 highest dividend yielders, you would have bought GE, and it would have basically submarined the strategy. The rest of the stocks actually, as a group, performed pretty well. And historically, you know, what I like about it is a consistent, disciplined approach that does generate a good dividend yield. And it is one where the track record has been noteworthy over the long term, although, again, there are some periodic years when it doesn't work as well.
Now, is the plan to go ahead and get those dividends? Is that the reason for the strategy, or has the track record showed
that the underlying premises for the strategy and why it should work? One is correct. I mean, you're getting a pretty nice dividend yield. I think the lowest yielder among the 10 dogs of the Dow is somewhere around 3%. So you're probably factoring in an average, if you buy those 10 stocks, somewhere around, 3.5 to 4%. IBM's yielding 5.5% right now, so that's a pretty spicy dividend yield. So you are getting paid in terms of the dividend yield, so you're not relying exclusively on capital gains. And then B, oftentimes, a higher dividend yield reflects the fact that the stocks probably have underperformed. As obviously the stock price goes lower, the dividend yield goes higher. So it is also a way to kind of earmark stocks in the Dow that maybe have underperformed over the last 12 months, and you would expect some reversion to the mean and some recovery in those stocks in the new year.
Is it important that you do invest in several of those individual stocks and not necessarily just picking one of them?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, if you're using this as a, you're comfortable putting a fair amount of money into it and making it a big part of your investment program, then you really need to buy more than just one, because you're putting an awful lot of risk on that one stock. If, on the other hand, this is kind of an ancillary strategy that you're playing, where you're going to devote some speculative dollars to it, and it doesn't comprise a big part of your overall portfolio strategy, then yes, if you want to pick, one or two stocks and do it that way, that's fine. But if you plan to, use this as a very important part of your financial investment plan for 2019, then I think you need to buy at least 5 and probably 10 of these.
Where do you see the big commanding tech stocks in the coming year?
I think they'll probably do okay. It's interesting, IBM being the top dog, it's one of the few kind of, quote, old tech names that really hasn't had that renaissance. You look at what's happened to Microsoft and Intel, and Cisco and some of those other kind of, quote, old line names in the Dow Jones Industrial Average have done extremely well over the last 5 years. For example, Microsoft's up 180%. On the other hand, IBM's down almost 40% over that five-year period. So IBM just hasn't gotten the mojo that the other ones have had for the last 5 years. And so I think in the aggregate, those old line tech names, especially Intel, which is a stock we like quite a bit, look pretty good for 2019. And it'll be interesting to see if IBM can kind of play a bit of catch up in the year as well.
Chuck, always good to have you on the show. Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Chuck publishes the Dow Theory Forecasts newsletter, and he's the author of the book Winning with the Dow's Losers. Coming up next, hundreds of medications being sold in the U.S. now come with a higher price tag now that we're in 2019.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The new year brings with it price increases on hundreds of drugs. We're joined by Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes. Bruce, is this just companies reevaluating things at the end of the year, or is there something else going on?
Well, actually, it seems to be business as usual. I mean, the drug companies will raise prices year in and year out. They do not have, there are no price controls in this country. I mean, despite the tweeting and the public shaming of Donald Trump, it hasn't done any good, really. I mean, now the good news for consumers is that a lot of your routine maintenance pills, capsules for cholesterol, high blood pressure, and so forth, those generics are they cost pennies. But what you have to pay attention to, especially right now after the first of the year, is whether your copays are going up because of some of these price increases. I mean, a lot of these price increases are from expensive brand name drugs or high tech biotech drugs for cancer treatments, rheumatoid arthritis, and so forth. So folks who have complicated medical conditions will be paying the higher prices. And that when drug companies raise their prices this year, you can expect that then to where people with it, health insurance will get it, will be in the form of higher copays and deductibles.
So this is not necessarily that these drugs have in some way become more expensive. It's just like every business does. You raise prices in order to keep up with inflation and just to continue growing.
Yeah, but in the case of the drug companies, they get away with it because they have somebody who's already going to be paying for it. I mean, health insurance is going to pay for it. Now, in other goods and services, if you don't want to buy a certain car because it's more expensive, you don't get that car. In the situation with healthcare and drugs, if it's covered, the health insurance company pays it, and how you end up getting stocked is with a copay, higher copay, or higher deductible, which you have little to no control over. One of the things that people should pay attention to is if you do have a drug and you're like, wait a minute, why am I paying more for this? check with your pharmacist, check with your doctor and say, is there a cheaper, a generic alternative that does just the same thing? I mean, there's a few websites, there's other things out there that consumers can look and they can examine. And don't be afraid to ask for a second opinion and other consultation, because a lot of these drugs do have a generic alternative.
Well, we've got the President of the United States saying that the cost should be lowered of prescription and medications. Is that going to do any good?
No. I mean, he's been in office for 2 years now. He had the drug companies on the ropes when he first took office. He met with the drug company CEOs in the White House, and what came out of that? Zero. There was nothing that came out of that. There was no regulation whatsoever. There's been nothing passed. There was attempts to appeal the Affordable Care Act and so forth. There was no policies, no laws, no nothing really that has done anything relative to abating the price increases and so forth, or encouraging people to use drugs with laws maybe that would regulate more transparency. Donald Trump has done zero on the drug price front.
Any other issues that are worrying you?
Well, a lot of issues that are worrying me, but I would say that on the healthcare front, one of the things people should pay attention to with the Democratic control of Congress is they're going to have to come up with some bipartisan things that are kind of interesting. And one is getting a lot of momentum, and I wrote about it over the weekend for Forbes, is this idea that potentially they would lower the age of Medicare below 65. Now, in a Republican Congress, you would say that is not going to happen, but you just never know. I mean, if you want to get people in the pool to pay for it's something to watch, at least to see if the Democratic Congress, the House, would pass something and what the Republicans might do with that.
Bruce Jafson, always good to have you on the show. Bruce is a Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes, and you can hear Bruce's reports on health Monday evenings and Saturday mornings here on News Radio. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, smart money moves to help your bottom line in 2019, and Bloomberg checks the markets next.
WBM News Time, 12:25. We're taking a look at the markets right now, sponsored by University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and here's Elisa Parenti.
Well, Chris, we are in the green still. The Dow up 45 points now, or about 0.2%, while the NASDAQ is gaining 0.3%, or 41 points. S&P up 7, and the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by almost 1% here. Wall Street is getting some newfound energy from energy companies. The price of oil jumping above $47 a barrel, as it appears Saudi Arabia is keeping its promise to cut oil exports. The price of oil last year fell for the first time in 3 years. Now let's take a look at the grains markets. For that, we turn to Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Lisa. Grain markets are higher as we move through the noon hour. A drier forecast for Brazil has been the supporting feature, with soybeans leading the charge higher. Most analysts have lowered their production estimates for the Brazilian crop. Corn futures are a quarter to three-quarters of a cent higher, soybeans 13 to 14 cents higher, and the wheat market 4 cents higher. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Happy New Year, Kurt, and thank you. With Business at 25 and 55 from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio, WBBM.
Stocks are pushing a little higher. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday, ways to help make this year a financial success.
Projections are out for the housing market in 2019. We'll examine whether it's likely to be a buyer or seller's market.
The new sheriff of Kane County will spend the night behind bars to get an inside look at what's going on.
President Trump meets with Democratic and Republican congressional leaders at the White House for a briefing on border security.
We're having some small gains on Wall Street. The Dow Industrial is up 36, the NASDAQ up 48, S&P 500 up by 10.
Going to be a really cloudy day in Chicagoland, but the rest of the week's going to be great with lots of sunshine. High today of 33. That's basically where we are now. 30 O'Hare, 31 Midway, and 33 along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
And the markets are in the black this afternoon, in the black, that is, Wall Street so far today. We're joined by the International Auto's Orland Park Business Line by Brian Battle, Director of Trading at Performance Trust at Capital Partners in Chicago. Are we going to be seeing the markets settling back a little bit, Brian?
Well, Chris, sort of like the weather report, the clouds have parted a little bit. We got off on a bad foot this morning, but we've come back a little bit. So everybody remembers last week we had a lot of volatility, a lot of selling off. But let's remember, in 2017, the S&P returned about 20%, and in 2018, it returned about a negative 6%. So over a two-year span, it's about a 7% return. So I think we're going to get used to a little bit more bouncing around. So these price changes and these market moves are a little bit more normal. They're also a little bit more healthy. Now, big downdrafts aren't great, and nobody likes that. But we're being driven by the events in Washington, D.C., and what's going on with oil. So those are probably the two things we're going to have to watch here in the short term.
Well, what we're seeing in Washington, D.C. is up and down and all around. You never know when something's coming out. How does an investor deal with that situation?
Well, the two places you have to watch in Washington are the Eccles Building, which is where the Federal Reserve resides, and they're raising interest rates slowly. So we're going to have to see if the Federal Reserve keeps raising interest rates, because as interest rates go higher, it gets harder for businesses to succeed. Remember, for 10 years, we had really low interest rates, and we're starting to make rates go higher. So that increase in rates is experimental. So we're learning about how smooth the Fed can leave zero interest rate policy. The other place is the Capitol. We have a really divided Congress now, and so we'll see if we can get anything done on economic issues, or more particularly trade and tariffs. You know, President Trump was constructive over the weekend, saying, hey, we're making progress with China about some trade issues, so that's helped that issue. So those three things, what's Congress going to do? Is the Fed going to keep raising rates, and can we get this tariff thing over with so we can get on with getting the global GDP going?
Rising rates are tough for a lot of businesses. What about banks, though, as an investor? Rising rates, is that good, possibly, for those bank stocks?
So it depends, Cisco. That's a great question. Banks tend to do better as rates rise because they borrow short and they make loans long. So they borrow at low short-term rates and they make loans at higher long-term rates. But right now, all yields are about the same. So it's a very difficult right now for banks, a lot harder than it has been for the past couple of years. So what the financial sector has been getting hit lately because of the uncertainty on what the Federal Reserve will do. The worst thing in the world for banks would be for short rates to be higher than long rates. So that was called an inversion in yield curves when short yields are higher than long interest rates. And there is some fear that that might happen. So that has put some of the, taken some of the momentum out of financial stocks, bank stocks.
Now, it sounds kind of boring, and we say it all the time, but in an environment like this where you have different news cycles and day-to-day kind of the markets are whipsawing, is it even more important to focus on fundamentals and look at each company and their performance and where they think they're going to go?
Cisco, I think that's right. There's two things that are most important. One is to have balance and a long-term time horizon. We've talked about that on the show before. But secondarily, I think fundamental analysis might be coming back in vogue. You know, for 10 years, low interest rates made everything look good, and it made, dividend rates look great. So people bought stocks because they kept going up on momentum. So fundamentals might be coming back in vogue where, hey, does a business have a defensible business model? Can they make money doing it? And what does it look like for the future? So those sort of fundamental questions, hopefully, and for in a more healthy market, will be things we'll be focusing on in the future. So those things are really going to become way more important.
We're looking at falling markets in two of our story stocks today, and that's Netflix and Tesla. What's going on?
So Netflix had added subscribers a little bit lighter than expected, so the shares are down 2%. That might have been a big story in 2017, but in 2018 and 2019, down 2% on a growing company like this isn't that big a deal. It's funny, Netflix expects a 56% earnings per share growth in 2019, but they're trading at a really expensive multiple, so you're paying a lot of money for a company that's growing like crazy. And so the fundamental question, as I just spoke about a second ago, is Can they defend it? Does it have to be Netflix, or is Roku going to take their business, or Amazon, or iTunes? Is Apple going to try and copy and do what Netflix does? So it's a very difficult business, but Netflix has come under a little bit of pressure. They just got a new CFO, so hopefully that will help Netflix going forward. But fundamentally, are they doing something that no one else can do? And that's a really good question for investors.
When it comes to Tesla, you have not the end of these tax credits, but they've been cut in half. Eventually, the tax credits for electric vehicles will be completely phased out. Are we now going to see if Tesla and some of the other companies making these electric cars can actually stand on their own now? A sort of a true market.
That is right. So this is the test for Tesla, Cisco. So the tax credit used to be, you get a tax credit of $7,500 to buy an all-electric car. In January 1st, it went to $3,750, got cut in half, and it's going to go to zero at the end of 2019. So can Tesla sell cars without a subsidy? So Tesla is getting to a point in the business where they're going to have to figure out if they need to cut production to fit the demand for their cars, because they're getting more expensive. So what they've done is they've reduced the price $2,000 a car, which is also going to hurt profitability. So, you know, we've heard a lot of times it's the demise of Tesla and it's all over. So Tesla stock has been, in the past year, has been between 387 and 244. So right now it's trading about 310, which is right at the midpoint. So the market seems to feel like Tesla still has a chance, and we're going to have to see how it goes. The challenge for Tesla this year, and this is the real challenge, is twofold. One, can they be profitable selling 250,000 cars a year? Is there demand for that? And B, and more importantly, companies like Porsche and Audi are ready to roll out their all-electric vehicles. So this looks like there's going to be real competition for all-electric cars, and Tesla's really going to have to compete or get better at manufacturing to make sure their stock price stays higher. But they have a lot of pressure on Tesla this year from the change in the tax code, their ability to produce, and competition, which is probably their biggest threat.
Brian Battle, thanks so much. Brian is Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, key strategies for your financial success in 2019. It's Personal Finance Wednesday here on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. This afternoon, we're looking at important money moves to make as the new year begins. To talk about it and give us some insight, we're joined by Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness. Craig, we're going to detail several things here, but right off the top, if you had to say this is the biggest one, this is the most important thing for you to consider concerning your money as we head into a new year, what would you advise people?
Oh, what would the single biggest thing be? I think people need to take it upon themselves to commit that right now, here and now, not next week, not next month, but today, they are going to get out of the financial hangover that credit card debt is and find a way that works for them to pay off the credit card debt. That's got to be number one on everyone's list.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a burden that really it keeps people from being able to do a whole bunch of things, from save for retirement to pay for the kids' college, all sorts of things.
That's just it. I find, especially this time of year, everyone's committed to weight loss, everyone's committed to being healthy, but if we could cure one ill in America that would then open up the gateway to get retired, to fund college, to find financial peace, it would be eliminate the struggle and the financial hangover of credit card debt.
Well, people might say that sounds good, but it seems to be kind of overwhelming. How do you start?
Well, I think you start, you know, first of all, we've talked before in the program about utilizing that debt snowball. And that debt snowball is all about behavioral finance. It's listing all of your balances in order, but from the smallest to the largest. And then what we're going to do is we're going to make minimum payments on everything but the smallest debt. And we're going to attack that smallest debt with a vengeance. So we end up having a series of victories. And that creates excitement as we roll that debt snowball down the hill to no credit cards. That's step number one. But something else we can be doing is people right now, just to improve their credit score, should be calling their credit card issuers and asking for their limits to be raised.
So technically, what is the very first step then?
Well, so I think, one, we'll do that debt snowball, list out all of the debts from smallest to largest. Then, number two, I want them to contact their credit card to see if they can have their limits raised, which, again, when you raise the limit that you can borrow, that doesn't mean you should borrow more money, but it'll help your FICO score. And if you can increase your FICO score, that can help you with the next step. And that next step is to look for some zero APR credit card offers that are out there on the internet.
What about savings? Obviously, if you're not out of debt, savings seems impossible, but it seems important to have an emergency fund and in general to sock some money away.
Well, that's just it. You know, once people have that emergency fund established, I think we need to make our savings work for us. And what I'm talking about now is, in case everyone's missed it, there are fantastic online money market rates where you can go to online banks and get 2% on your cash. So I challenge everybody, take a look at the emergency savings, as you mentioned, Cisco, and if you're only earning point something, let's turn that into 2 point something, because that's a step in the right direction.
Sometimes you just need to add more income, especially if you have a lot of debt that you have to get out of. Any advice for people who maybe can't take on another full-time job or something like that, but just need a little extra money?
That enters in what we all refer to as the side hustle. And sometimes people are dismissive of the side hustle, but I think what gets a lot of people into credit card debt in the first place is, you know, having these excess bills of $300, $500, $800 a month that just seem to come out of nowhere. And you can get a side hustle, and we all know the names. It doesn't have to be Uber. It doesn't have to be Lyft, but you could tutor. You could do an online blog. If you're in the city, people need dog walkers like it's going out of style. And you can add several hundred dollars a month to your income with that side hustle. And one, I think that'll help keep you out of debt. And two, that could be money that you directly put towards those emergency savings or credit card bills.
For those who are working and have a job, what about 401k contributions? What can you do with that?
Well, you're absolutely right, because you know what? You cannot borrow for retirement, right, Chris? No one's going to give you a loan to retire. So everybody has this personal responsibility to save and invest. And I think that starts with the 401k contribution. And this year, the maximum contributions are up. If you're in a position, you can actually put up to $19,000 away into a 401k plan. If you're eligible for a catch-up because you've crossed over a certain age, you can do an additional $6,000. But at a minimum, if you have a 401k plan with a company match, you have to put at least enough in to get that company match, because no one should be passing up on free money.
You're leaving money sitting on the table if you don't do that.
Yeah, and you know what? And we see it time and time again, which is why we harp on it. And in fact, going into 2019, you know, one of the reasons that people have been worried about the Federal Reserve is, you know, the Federal Reserve is data dependent. They're seeing these growing wages. So for the workers that are out there, if you're going to be getting a pay raise in 2019, whether that pay raise is 2%, 3%, 6%, it might be unique to everybody, but I challenge workers to increase the amount that they defer into their 401k by just 1 or 2%. And if you increase the amount of savings by 1% or 2%, you're probably not going to feel it, especially if you're getting a pay raise in the monthly budget. And that additional 1% to 2% of savings is going to go such a long way over the next several decades to helping you secure retirement.
Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness, joining us on Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday, and still to come, a look at the housing market for the year ahead. Will it be a year for buyers or sellers?
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Interest rates are higher. Some home buyers now have concerns about the economy. Let's talk about the housing market in 2019 with Tendai Kapfidze, who is the chief economist at LendingTree in New York. Welcome to the Noon Business Hour, Tendai. And let's talk about the kinds of trends that you expect this year in housing.
Hi, thanks for having me on the program. I think for 2019, we're expecting housing to slow down a little bit. And what we mean by that is that home price gains are going to moderate. So nationally, they're going to come down from about 6% down towards, we believe, around 4% year over year. And we're also going to see mortgage rates probably a little bit higher again in 2019, which is one of the key things that slowed down the housing market in 2018.
And the economy overall, what do you expect to see?
Yeah, the economy overall is also going to slow. Part of the strong growth that we saw in 2018 was driven by, if you remember, at this time last year, everybody was talking about the tax cut. And another thing that happened was there was a huge fiscal stimulus, which is basically the government borrowing and spending money. A lot of that went into defense spending. So the economy got a real boost from the government last year and from the tax cut. And a lot of that is going away this year. So we'll have a slow economy down to about 2.5% from 3%.
Do you see 2019 as a buyer's market, seller's market, somewhere in between?
I typically don't like that terminology. I guess what I will say is that, with home price growth slowing, we're starting to see a little bit more inventory on the marketplace. So things are getting better for buyers from that perspective. But because we also expect mortgage rates to increase, that increases the cost of borrowing for buyers. So really, it always boils down to an individual decision and individual finances. You should never enter or exit the market based on whether it's a buyer's or a seller's market, however you define that.
And are there other things that are influencing it too? I'm thinking employment and wage growth, those sorts of things, giving people an opportunity to buy.
Yeah, so the labor market is really the strongest part of the economy. Unemployment is at the lowest level it's been in about 50 years. And importantly, we're starting to see a little bit of wage growth start to emerge in the economy. So financially, people are in relatively good situation in terms of being able to access the housing market when you look at whether people have jobs and whether people are seeing increasing wages in those jobs.
We have been hearing from time to time, even economists saying there's a possibility of a recession next year. Is it too soon to talk about that?
Yeah, I think the probability of a recession next year is pretty low. I think what has led people to say that has been this volatility that we've been seeing in the financial markets. But the financial markets are not the whole economy, right? They are meaningful and important, but I think certainly the volatility that we've seen is indicative of other factors such as political uncertainty and not necessarily underlying weakness in the economy. So the economy is still pretty strong, and a recession in 2019, I would say, is very unlikely.
Thanks for the insight and analysis. Tendai Kapfidze, chief economist at LendingTree in New York. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour, at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app. Bloomberg checks the markets next.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. Business News is powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program. And here is Lisa Parenti.
Well, Chris, we are still headed higher with the Dow up 44 points or 0.2%, NASDAQ gaining 50 or 0.75%, S&P advancing 0.33% or 9 points, and the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by 0.75%. So not a bad way to start 2019. The new year is bringing higher prices on about a quarter of the 500 top brand name prescriptions. Drug makers are taking it slow this time, though. According to Goldman Sachs, drug makers had raised prices on nearly half of those drugs at this point last year, and the price hike, averaging 4%, is half of last year's. 2018 was the year of the truck. Analysts say GM Chevy, Silverado, and Chrysler's Ram trucks helped push industry-wide sales to 17.3 million. Light trucks accounted for nearly 70% of those sales. IHS Markit says that will get close to 75% over the next 4 years as car makers drop sedan models. And Tesla is cutting prices by $2,000 because the federal tax credit for electric car buyers has been cut in half. The price break is sending the stock down, though, in the red by more than 6.5%. Discounts are not good for profits, and for customers, they can become habit-forming. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago. We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.